Hello, everyone, and welcome back to KPMG and Canada's State of Digital Assets podcast series. Today, we will be focusing on the Bitcoin mining industry. Starting with our KPMG participants, I am so pleased to welcome back our Digital Assets Center of Excellence. Gents, could you quickly introduce yourself and your roles at KPMG?
Thank you, Adam, and pleasure to be here. My name is George Jurek. I'm a manager with the Digital Assets Center of Excellence here in KPMG Canada. And I focus on everything related to digital assets, blockchain, including Bitcoin mining. So really happy to be here and excited to discuss this relevant topic.
Thank you very much, Adam and George. Great to be back on the podcast. My name is Khan. I'm a technology risk consultant and Bitcoin specialist at our Center of Excellence here based in Toronto. And I'm looking forward to today's discussion.
Well, thank you both for taking the time out of your busy schedules to be here. Now, we are beyond excited to welcome a very special guest from the Bitcoin mining sector, Amanda Fabiano. Amanda, please introduce yourself and tell our listeners what you do.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm excited to be here. My name is Amanda. I'm the founder of Fabiano Consulting, which is a company focused on mining and also investors. So what I try to do is help mining companies grow and also help investors think about how they can look into the mining industry. I recently started this in October of 2023. And before this endeavor, I was the head of mining at Galaxy Digital. During my three-year tenure there, I successfully spearheaded the acquisition of $100 million Helios mining asset. I grew and expanded Galaxy's proprietary mining operation. I helped facilitate over $400 million worth of miner finance with zero defaults, which was pretty good over the past cycle. And I also assembled and led a team of more than 50 highly skilled professionals. So that was a fun three-year stint there at Galaxy. I was really excited about what I did there. Prior to my time at Galaxy, I was the director of Bitcoin mining at Fidelity Investments. Back in 2017, there weren't as many people paying attention to Bitcoin mining as there are today, but you know, there really is no Bitcoin without Bitcoin mining. So it always excited me and made me think about, you know, what is this whole mining world that exists and is the backbone of this industry that is continuing to grow.
Absolutely. And we're all here because we're thinking about it too. We are so excited to have you on the pod with us here today. So Bitcoin mining, hot topic, maybe understatement of the century, right? Garnering a wide range of perspectives from around the world. Some jurisdictions are cautiously monitoring this technology, whereas others, they've chosen to pretty much embrace and experiment with it. So before we take a deep dive, as we tend to do on here, let's just set the stage. You know, I want to start with a very simple question, which is, what is Bitcoin mining? Amanda, can I come to you first?
Sure. Yeah, it's funny you asked that question because I was driving home from the gym with my sister yesterday, and she said to me, I thought Bitcoin miners were people. And I had to explain to her that it was computers, right? So that was a hilarious conversation that even though I've been working this for a while, I still haven't successfully explained this to my sister, but I'll try again here. So put simply, it's the process of verifying transactions on the blockchain. So if we think about a normal credit card transaction, every time you swipe a card, the bank says, yep, confirmed. You have this money and you're going to spend it here and I'm going to move that money from here to here, right? Miners are the equivalent of this, but there are obviously some significant differences. One huge difference than traditional banking is that miners are not a centralized party. So all miners are competing against each other to win what we call win the next block. And in exchange for miners providing that work and mining that block, which is very similar to, you know, rolling a dice until you roll the desired outcome. That's probably the best analogy that I have for thinking about how, you know, mining works. In exchange for winning that, they get freshly minted Bitcoin and then the transaction fees that the user paid to have a miner put their transaction into the block. So mining, what is really cool is the physical part of this digital network. And it's backed by hardware, which we call ASICs. So ASICs are application-specific integrated circuit devices. And they're put in Bitcoin mining data centers around the world. The more ASICs you have as a miner, the bigger your slice of the pie is, and the more chances you have to be profitable and win a block. So you can't control the total network hash rate. You can't control the Bitcoin price. You can't control any of the, you know, the outcomes of Bitcoin, but you can control your own hash rate and your own cost to mine a Bitcoin. So the inputs that matter to think about from a mining perspective is that is super critical is the cost of energy. So ASICs at this point are somewhat commoditized, but energy costs can really set a miner apart in the long run. Obviously, we have this seismic shift happening in Bitcoin, which is the halving. And it's critical that a miner is on the low end of that cost curve. Otherwise, if their cost to mine a Bitcoin becomes higher than the Bitcoin price, they become unprofitable and they'll have to shut down or turn off their operations.
Thank you for that great synopsis, Amanda. And just to add a few more points to build on this, at its core, Bitcoin mining operates as a probability game, wherein the Bitcoin network undergoes updates to its global ledger approximately every 10 minutes or so with a new batch of transactions. This is facilitated by a network, by a widespread network of specialized computers. Those are the ASICs that Amanda referred to, which engage in a competitive race to secure the privilege of updating the Bitcoin blockchain. So this competition involves the execution of vast cryptographic computations, and miners are enticed to undertake this resource-intensive endeavor through two primary forms of rewards. Firstly, they receive new Bitcoins generated with the addition of each new block. Secondly, they accrue transaction fees from all the transactions incorporated within the block. So this collective reward structure is commonly referred to as the block reward. The underlying aim of this design is twofold. So firstly, it ensures that the security of the Bitcoin network remains decentralized, really a core principle here, and that disperses control across a vast array of participants. Secondly, it facilitates network-wide consensus without necessitating centralized coordination. So Bitcoin mining truly embodies a cornerstone element in upholding the integrity and functionality of the entire Bitcoin ecosystem.
Amanda and George, thank you both for that great introduction. So in summary, what we're really saying is Bitcoin mining is a cybersecurity feature and also a solution to a coordination problem. Now, secondarily, mining is also the mechanism by which Bitcoin's monetary policy is implemented. So the block subsidy that we just talked about is programmed to start with an initial distribution of 50 coins per block, and this decreases by half every 210,000 blocks, or approximately 4 years, and this is set to repeat 33 times. So what this implies is a disinflationary money supply curve throughout an issuance period of over 100 years, which converges to 21 million Bitcoin at a final block subsidy date in around the year 2140. Now, after this issuance period, the block subsidy will cease to exist, implying two things. First, that miners will be incentivized by transaction fees only, and that secondly, the Bitcoin mining supply will remain fixed in the long run. So where do we stand today in this process? Bitcoin is currently in its fourth epoch with a block subsidy of 6.25 coins per block with an upcoming halving date estimated for April 2024. 94% of the Bitcoin supply is already in circulation with around 1.3 million coins left to be mined. And if we take a look at the proportion of the block subsidy to transaction fees in the collective block reward, right now, the fees actually constitute a minuscule percent, around 5%, which means that mining revenues tend to be sensitive to the underlying price of Bitcoin. But as we observe the halvings take place over time, we expect this dynamic to shift.
That's awesome. So Khan, give me one sec. I'm just going to mark my calendar for 2140, the year 2140, and I'll be back in a second. No, I'm kidding. I want to shift gears to talk a little bit about the history of mining and how we got to where we are today. So Amanda, maybe I'll start with you. How has mining evolved over time? Are there maybe some key milestones along the way that you'd like to point out?
Yeah, sure. One thing I wanted to mention that Khan said that is a really interesting metric. We think about transaction fees. They've been growing a lot more because of what came out last year with ordinals. And so hoping that that will be something that will continue to help the security budget of Bitcoin going forward for miners. In 2022, miners received about 5,375 Bitcoin in transaction fees. And in 2023, miners received 23,445 Bitcoin in transaction fees. So a 4.5 increase in fees, which changes, you know, the dynamic of how you think about the block subsidy, what Khan was talking about. It becomes, you know, when you think about mining over time, with transaction fees increasing, it becomes really interesting. But let's talk about where it started, right, Adam? That's where we're going back to. So when we think about Bitcoin, it started in this online community, right? With Satoshi, it was really hobbyist at first, and the same thing went for mining. people use their computers, they use CPUs, GPUs, and then it turned into specialized devices to mine Bitcoin with. A lot of the hash rate started in China with these mega mining farms, which followed the cheapest energy annually. So they would switch between when they could get cheap energy and hydro energy in China, and then they would switch when it became rainy season, and they would go to Mongolia and they would get cheap energy there and go back and forth. And that was a large part of what how the mining industry grew back in the last cycle. Then we had the China ban on mining, and it really changed the geographical landscape of Bitcoin mining globally. We also had the increase in public miners in the US, right, in 2022, which created a large shift in how we understand mining and the transparency of the network. When everything was in China in 2017, in the last beginning of the last cycle, you really didn't know what was going on, right? Like you saw the hash rate, you saw the Bitcoin price, you didn't know where things were, but public miners allow us to have a little bit more insight into the network because they have to provide information to shareholders, right? Now, public miners only account for about a third of the total network hash rate still. So mining is still this globally competitive landscape where you don't have full insight into what's happening. Because of, you know, the weirdness of Bitcoin, and I think we've gotten a little bit better there with ETFs, right? Capital becomes something that becomes very difficult to come by, and mining is extremely capital intensive. What we saw in the last cycle is miners raise a lot of debt, right, to grow their infrastructure and grow their hash rate. And so that was a really interesting thing because it allowed us to see how much miners are growing in the US, but also change the dynamic of the whole industry. What we saw last year was this perfect storm unfold in mining. We had macro trends resulting in skyrocketing energy prices. And remember, energy prices is one of the largest inputs for mining. We saw Bitcoin prices get super depressed. And then capital markets completely closed and cheap money was not really available anymore. So 2022 was really this really difficult year for all miners. It resulted in bankruptcies. It resulted in sell-offs. It resulted in this idea of survival of the fittest, right? And then that was 2022. I think I said last year. I'm still confused in what year I'm in. But then, you know, last year, really 2023, we saw miners right-size their balance sheet, especially public miners. We saw people become a little bit more realistic, right, with like growth plans. And you still saw the network hash rate grow. So I think over time, what I'm hoping for in this next cycle is that we'll see more transparency for some of the public miners, and operational excellence will become something that sets one miner apart from the others.
Thank you, Amanda. That was a great synopsis of the evolution of Bitcoin mining. But just to bring us back to the way, way beginning and talk about the very first block that was mined on Bitcoin, that Genesis block was mined on January 3rd, 2009. And you fast forward to today, we have nearly 850,000 blocks being mined to date, facilitating approximately 975 million transactions. Pretty incredible hypergrowth in that decade. So every 10 minutes, as of today, a global network of hundreds of thousands of these ASICs compete for the exclusive rights to update the ledger, earning Bitcoins in return. So the evolution of mining is really a testament to its rapid advancement from a humble hobby in basements, as Amanda noted, to a hyper-competitive industrial-scale operation. Initially, Bitcoin mining was accessible to most computers equipped with central processing units or CPUs. However, the intensifying competition, coupled with the exponential surge in Bitcoin's value, spurred a lot of innovation. So graphics processing units, or GPU chips, and field programmable gate arrays soon followed, offering enhanced mining capabilities. However, the true game changer arrived with the introduction of ASIC chips designed specifically for mining. And this innovation ushered in unprecedented efficiency gains, catalyzing the growth of a billion-dollar global industry. So then the China ban came into effect and subsequent swifts in capital and hash rate from Asia into North America have prompted reflection on the resilience and adaptability of the mining ecosystem. It raises questions about geographical diversification and regulatory considerations. It also highlights the emerging trends such as advanced cooling methods and the fusion of mining with AI as a revenue stream. That really just underscores the dynamic nature of this mining landscape. So with that, Amanda, I want to pose this question to you. What lessons do you perceive from the China ban, and how do you envision the future trajectory of the mining industry amidst these trends? And what developments stand out to you presently?
That's a great question. I think, you know, the China ban at this point was so long ago, right, that we've seen it not really have that big of an effect on miners over the past couple of years. So I think that was just this pivotal moment that it was shocking and completely changed where the geographical distribution was of mining. And I think that was, when we think about locations that miners go to, obviously being cautious of risks, right? Like political risks become really more important now than ever before. And I think that really highlighted and opened that narrative up to people that were looking to grow. Operationally, there has been some really cool things that existed. So I, for one, have done data centers where you can do you know, immersion cooling. I think one thing that's really cool about mining is you don't really need this tier one data center set up. So miners are super gritty in how they can get things set up, and they really just chase the cheapest electricity possible. So that gets them on the low end of that cost curve that we talked about earlier. So location wise, you know, Texas has really become a hub for Bitcoin miners, and that's because of how the ERCOT market works there. There's this ability to turn off your machine, sell it back to the grid, sell that energy back to the grid. And it's not really about like mining Bitcoin anymore. It's just about, you know, having this energy arbitrage. There's all different types of mining that exists. There's people who are using oil fields and off-grid mining, taking some of the flared gas that exists in the world, capturing that, putting it into mining Bitcoin. And in those situations, you don't have to be up 100% of the time. So again, that like grit and resiliency of Bitcoiners and miners just trying to figure out what's the cheapest way to get electricity exists. There's also some really cool projects now starting around waste energy and removing waste energy to be able to use that type of, to mine Bitcoin with it. So, you know, I think what we see and what we've seen in the past is miners are extremely resilient. They change when they need to, and they're all just chasing that really cheap energy cost to grow their businesses. What we've also seen is that miners are starting to think about different revenue streams. So there's been a lot of conversation around, will energy companies become miners? But the question will become, will miners become energy companies? And I think we're starting to see some of that shift happen now.
Amanda and George, this is a great discussion. I just want to add a little bit of color into what Amanda has just touched on. So nowadays, Bitcoin mining is really a data center and energy infrastructure business. The current state of mining, just like we talked about, is highly competitive, capital intensive, energy intensive, and it's enabled by a complex supply chain. This supply chain is really an intricate web of subsectors, starting all the way from semiconductor and ASICs production from one end, to infrastructure brokerage, mining pool services, and financial services on the other, with data center hosting and energy generation in between. Now, we keep touching on the halving events. This is really a built-in design into Bitcoin, which forces miners to be as efficient as possible by minimizing costs, since they face this inevitable stress test every 4 years. Because of this, miners are motivated to find the cheapest sources of energy available, given that electricity is the main operating cost that a mining facility faces. So we observe two prevalent strategies at the moment, one being in front of the meter, i.e. grid connected, and the second being behind the meter, i.e. co-location with power generators. Now, the grid model is interesting because it could enable economies of scale from an energy acquisition perspective, as large-scale miners may obtain cheaper energy rates based off of the load size they bring onto a grid. And this would entail real options such as demand response and ancillary services, which is enabled by the flexible and interruptible nature of Bitcoin mining as a compute load. The second option is co-location. This is interesting because it feeds off of deadweight loss like flare gas, which Amanda just touched on, and mismatches in energy demand and supply. So miners tend to target intermittent renewables such as solar and wind, and also base loads such as hydro, nuclear, and geothermal. And this strategy looks a bit more like vertical integration and or partnerships or joint ventures. And it essentially entails energy arbitrage, where the power generator gets to choose whether they sell energy to the grid or to the Bitcoin network.
Super interesting. I want to touch on that energy piece you were just talking about a little bit more, because for me, energy and the environment, it goes hand in hand, right? So Amanda, I'm going to come to you. What are some of the key environmental trends around Bitcoin mining and energy?
So to start, energy use is not a bad thing. As humans, right, we've continuously figured out ways to utilize more energy to grow and expand the way that we live. How mining sometimes gets this bad rep for using energy, and that's just because it's extremely transparent. You can look at the Bitcoin network at any time and say, this is exactly how much energy is being used. You can't do that with traditional finance, with like the gold industry, et cetera. We've tried to be able to figure that out, but it's just not as transparent. So mining has traditionally gotten this bad stamp of approval from mainstream media and other political groups, right, for using energy. But really, when you think about energy, it is abundant. There's plenty of energy that is unused, and miners are finding ways to use that abundant energy that is unused. Mining generally, it has the ability to work hand in hand with energy sources to really help bolster what their goals are. So like Khan was saying, if you are using, off-grid sites, you can shut down when energy isn't there. If you're using on-grid sites, you can also shut down and sell that energy back to the grid. And we've seen that happen. We've seen in Texas when there were, a constraint for energy, the hash rate dropped because all miners were turning off and selling that energy back to the grid. They're taking advantage, obviously, of the solutions that exist in Texas, but that is all within the rules, right, of how the grid was created there. I think miners will continuously find really cool, innovative ways to use energy in a way that is beneficial to just them and also the world. And there really isn't another data center style project that works like that. You don't need redundancy power for mining. You don't need, high speed, internet with backup, air conditioning and stuff like that. So it is really this unique style of using energy that allows you to really be flexible, and not a lot of other computing networks allow for that type of flexibility. So I personally love how miners are finding, a company that is doing heaters in your house that you can buy that you plug it in and you mine Bitcoin with. And that's not even about, being profitable. It's being about, just being part of the network. There's groups that are, like we said before, using, heat recapture, and I've talked to groups that are using heat recapture for like fish farms, and that reduces the cost there. So there's lots of different revenue streams now that miners are starting to get into related to energy. And so it's been interesting to see that dynamic shift over time. And really the core fundamental being, what is the lowest cost of energy that I can get to be profitable as a miner?
I think Amanda and Khan, you hit the nail on the head here. It's really become a nuanced discussion when talking about Bitcoin's energy consumption. You can even make the argument that Bitcoin mining has emerged as a disruptive force in energy markets due to this distinctive energy consumption profile. And as you both noted, acting as a baseload, Bitcoin mining exhibits traits of very high flexibility, interruptibility, and its location and scale agnostic at the same time. So this unique profile has really unlocked a plethora of positive externalities, has the potential to truly reshape the energy landscape in unexpected ways. So question for you, Khan, can you give us some illustrative examples of this?
Definitely. So Amanda just touched on a few great examples of negative externalities being internalized by this new market-driven solution, one being utilizing stranded flare, methane gas in oil and gas operations, and also in landfill sites. There are also other innovative edge case solutions, such as waste tire repurposing and even reclamation of coal refuse sites. But if we now take a look at the positive side of this, what benefits are we seeing that are unexpected and surprising? One is that electrical grids are now able to use Bitcoin mining loads as a demand response mechanism. So grid operators need to be able to balance energy demand and supply in real time. Integrating Bitcoin mining loads enables excess supply to be monetized instead of being curtailed, and it also allows for the reallocation of current supply during stressful periods of excess demand. Another interesting use case is also in subsidizing clean energy infrastructure projects. And what we mean by this is improving the economics of co-location behind the meter projects. So Bitcoin mining operations can be utilized to bootstrap profitability as an initial anchor tenant. This approach would enable renewable energy projects to use Bitcoin miners as a buyer of first resort, providing immediate cash flows, return of investment, and also reducing payback periods. And this financial profile improvement may significantly motivate initial investments and actually expand energy supply. Just as Amanda touched on, there's also the electrification of heat for niche use cases, for example, agriculture or for district heating. And this may be able to offset some use of fossil fuels, for example, natural gas. So in summary, Bitcoin mining is really a new tool for the traditional energy sector to consider because it brings in this new concept of responsive demand and allows for energy producers to optimize their operations.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that take, Khan. You know, as we come to a close, we have got to bring this thing full circle. We began with a look back at the very beginning of Bitcoin. Let's finish by looking forward. So what are you thinking about leading up to the upcoming halving event? And what is your future outlook in general on mining? Amanda, I'll come to you first.
Halvings are such an interesting time in Bitcoin, just because you have no idea what's going to happen afterwards. And no one can, even if you had a crystal ball, I think it would go totally different than what you're assuming. I do think there's going to be continuous M&A in mining. So we've seen some M&A activity already start, and a lot of that, you know, it started really during the bear market when people needed help. And I think now we're going to see that continue to increase. I think mining generally is a capital intensive business. Access to capital is super important. And on the private side, it's really hard to get access to capital when the alternative is public miner investing and also now the ETF investing with liquidity. So I think private miners are going to have to get really creative on how their access to capital, because I just don't think there's a ton of market there just based on, you know, conversations that I've had with investors. So there is this massive opportunity for someone that is interested in mining to be able to invest. And really, that's where, not to plug myself, but where my business comes in, right, is like, it's that's what I'm trying to help people with, right, because they don't really know how to navigate. I think we'll still, like after the halving, we'll continue to see a lot of development in Bitcoin mining on the building side, and just also thinking about future operational excellence and growth. So one thing that's popped up is really hydro miners now, right? Like, will that really be the go forward path for miners? Flexibility in data centers, will we, you know, see a lot more containerized solutions pop up? Who's going to be the winner there? I think the consolidation and growth are going to be the two biggest things over the next couple of years. And I'm excited to see who the winner will be on the other side.
No, totally agree with your points there, Amanda. And the one thing that I'd like to add that I think is an important point with the halving coming up is Bitcoin mining difficulty. So this really refers to the concept that as more miners join the Bitcoin network and technological advances enhance mining efficiency, the competition to solve these cryptographic puzzles also intensifies. In fact, it's also true for the opposite. If miners were to exit the network, or if mining hardware becomes less efficient, the difficulty level would decrease to maintain the target block time. So this is really an important point because it is becoming far more competitive and difficult to mine Bitcoin. And that plays a really crucial role in safeguarding the security and integrity of the entire network. And by making it more challenging for malicious actors to manipulate transactions or disrupt the blockchain, the rising difficulty contributes to the overall resiliency of Bitcoin, the asset. So that's just another point I wanted to add. The rise of Bitcoin mining difficulty is really a testament to the dynamic nature of the ecosystem and reflects both its technological advancements and its resilience in the face of evolving challenges.
And I think watching what happens with the difficulty adjustment after the halving will be really interesting as well, because you might see some miners shut off because they have old hardware, right? They couldn't get access to capital to recapitalize their machines. And also they might be on the mid to like high end of the cost curve. One thing that's different about this halving versus the last halving is, you know, mining is really the most competitive, equal competitive like game that you could possibly play. But now it's access to capital and also you know, cost of capital that really matters. So when you have these public miners that have better access to capital and a lower cost of capital, even though they might be a little bit higher on the cost curve because they have those two access points, you might see some private guys not be able to keep up with the public guys because of that dynamic. So I think what we see this time around is with this emergence of public miners, it really shifts a little bit how you can think about the overall cost curve of mining.
Exactly, Amanda. This is where economies of scale truly come into play for miners.
And economies of scale cost a lot of money in mining.
Exactly.
Excellent points, Amanda and George. I'm very curious to see how the industry will fare with this upcoming stress test, the halving event. And I think that there are also clear signs of increasing maturity within the mining sector compared to the previous cycle, especially in terms of energy optimization and the emergence of a hedging industry for hash rate. So that's one trend that I'm looking forward to observing, is how the mining industry continues to tap into synergies with traditional energy.
Khan, I have a question for you. Am I allowed to ask questions?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Do you think that hash rate derivatives will ever be something that is like obtainable in mining? Or do you think we'll see more treasury management on the traditional side with like their Bitcoin and production?
That's an excellent question. That's very interesting. I think when it comes to derivatives based on hash rate, it's a very embryonic stage at the moment. There are synthetic products and there are products that are trying to actually deliver a real hash rate as well, which is quite interesting to see. But I do see a big opportunity for traditional financial services to bring in their commodity sector specific experience and put that commodities lens into this area and be able to innovate with new financial services, insurance products, forward contracts and options, et cetera. So this, I think, is an area that is bound and ripe for innovation.
Totally agree with you. My perspective on hash rate derivatives, I would love if they could work. I think there's this mismatch between buying and selling. When I as a miner want to sell my forward production, it's when Bitcoin price is lower. I think Bitcoin price is going to stay low. And maybe someone on the other side is also bearish, right? So they might not want to buy it. On the other side, I want to buy Bitcoin futures when, you know, I feel really confident about a miner's operations, because all of this is still backed by physical operations. So I think sometimes thinking about a marketplace that is dynamic is hard when you are still backed by like, is this group really good at operating? So I think this will still trade a little bit OTC, like you said, embryonic stage for a while before we get to a point where it's more developed. Over the past 4 years, I did 3 rounds of interviews with miners, private, public, small, large, and I talked to them about hedging, because I do think miners should be thinking about hedging their Bitcoin production. You know, when people wanted to hedge, when Bitcoin was at like 15K. So I'm hoping that in this next cycle, we'll see some more advancements in treasury management and thinking about things more sophisticated in a way that like traditional companies think about hedging their production, so that we can see some, there's not as much stress on miners when things shift back and forth.
Absolutely. Thank you for the question, Amanda. That's a great one.
And thank you all, Amanda, George, Khan. The concepts covered today have really highlighted the significance of Bitcoin mining in the crypto industry. The growing institutional adoption of this concept should help to improve the industry's overall position in the long term. Thank you, everybody, for this exciting podcast episode. Unfortunately, we are out of time for today. Join us next time on KPMG Canada's State of Digital Assets Pod Bite series.